Tokyo Podcast Episode Number 12.
Hey everybody, on today's show we're going to talk about learning Japanese through anime. Is it possible? My guest today says yes. And also, is it possible to find a smoke-free cafe in Tokyo? Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And on today's show, we're going to be talking to a gentleman named Ken Cannon, who runs a website called Learn Japanese Through Anime. Now, this is a bit of a controversial topic because there's arguments on both sides. Can you learn Japanese by watching anime? Can you not? So I'm going to be talking to Ken about what his site offers and how he actually learned Japanese through anime. But first, I want to talk about a pet peeve of mine in Japan, which is smoking. If you're a smoker, Japan is probably the ideal country for you, besides maybe Eastern Europe, because I was in Belgrade once, and I think that whole entire country smokes. But Japan, they have some very, very strange smoking laws here and smoking habits. You know, despite the fact that the government has signed international anti-smoking laws, they still own 50% of Japan Tobacco, which is the third largest cigarette company in the world. So this, because the government hasn't officially declared smoking to be unhealthy, it hasn't really crept into the consciousness of the people that perhaps it is unhealthy. So you will find many strange smoking customs here. For example, they have smoking areas outside. So outside, you're restricted to what areas you can smoke. But inside a restaurant or inside a hotel or inside a cafe, you can smoke anywhere. And so that doesn't make any sense. And what's even worse is when you go into a cafe and you request a non-smoking section, they will seat you right next to someone who's smoking. I read on Twitter recently that having a smoking section in a restaurant is like having a peeing section in a pool. And I think that's a really apt description because when you're sitting next to a smoker, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're technically in the smoking section or not, you're still going to smell the smoke. And apparently that hasn't clued into the Japanese waitstaff yet. So it's very, very pro-smoking here. And one of the reasons for this is that the current government receives a lot of support, obviously, from smokers. There's over 10,000 tobacco farmers in Japan, and many of them have been strong supporters of the government. And so don't expect to see any new anti-smoking laws in Japan anytime soon. So what are your options? Well, today I am going to talk to a gentleman named Brad Stevenson about his website called 25cafes.com. And what's really cool about this site is it is a travel guide to 100% smoke-free cafes in Japan. So if you're interested in coming to Japan and you want to find a nice, clean, smoke-free environment to eat your lunch, then 25cafes.com is your best source. Hey, Brad, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you going?
Good. So tell me about your website. I stumbled upon your website after searching for just regular cafes, actually. I was trying to find a cafe that has Wi-Fi, which is another thing that's quite rare here.
Yeah.
And when I finally came across your website and saw that it was, you know, listed all these smoke-free places, I thought this was fantastic because it seems like smoke-free environments are actually kind of hard to find here.
Yeah, no, I really just started the 25cafes.com because there's a need for it. I noticed just for myself in general, just like when I want to go out and go on a date or even meet friends and just catch up, it's really hard to find a place to just sit down and relax and have a regular conversation without being bombarded with all the smoke.
Why is smoking so strong here in Japan?
I don't know. I always kind of think that a lot of, not in a bad way, but I think a lot of Japanese culture is about 10 years or so behind a lot of Western countries. Right. So again, not in like a bad negative way. I'm just saying that you see the way things progress here. It just happens about 10 years behind everyone else. And you can see it kind of starting to change now. Like there has been efforts in the legal system to like stop smoking or ban smoking. None of them successful, but people have started changing a little bit. And just in the last few years, I've noticed a lot more smoke-free restaurants and cafes opening up in Tokyo, right, which is quite big because if just 3 or 4 years ago, there's really only one or two.
Well, the one thing I don't understand is I've seen these signs on the outside of restaurants that have like a number, some kanji I don't recognize, and then a smoking sign, and then another number, and then a non-smoking sign.
Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, that's the probably the amount of seats. So, like, in the cafe, they'll have, like, 20 smoking seats and, like, 25 non-smoking seats.
Ah, okay. But
so, normally on the same floor.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, as I mentioned in the intro, they're probably right beside each other.
Yeah, pretty much. There's, like, sometimes, like, you know, McDonald's has, like, the glass walls. You have, like, the smoking fish tank kind of thing. But, again, like, there's, like, no vacuum ceiling. It's, like, the smoke can leak out from the, you know, the doorways. Or over the glass. It's, yeah.
Right. Oh, okay, so that's kind of like a Japanese way of saying, look, we have a non-smoking section.
I know, right?
But you're right next to the smoking section.
And it's very self-defeating because you realize people who want to go into a cafe who are after non-smoking seats, they'll see that and not go in there because they realize it's not effective. So then the restaurants think, well, we're not getting any people coming in here after non-smoking seats, so we'll keep the smoking seats. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's a bit of a frustration.
Do you think there's a trend in Japan going towards non-smoking inside restaurants or away from it?
I think so. I think you'll definitely, well, there's definitely been a growth in non-smoking cafes recently. Even just like new businesses popping up. I've noticed quite a few, even one in my place where I live near Nakano. Yeah, quite a few non-smoking cafes that really surprised me. But I don't know, it's really hard to tell because it's kind of like two steps forward, one steps back, where you think, oh, they're finally going to get like a no-smoking law, and then it gets turned around or someone sues the government. Or I don't know, it's just change happens very slowly here, so it's really hard to tell.
Well, I also read, too, that the government, they need to pass this 12 trillion yen budget for reconstruction of Tohoku.
Yeah.
And to do that, they need the support of the opposition party, which controls the upper house.
Mm.
And apparently the opposition party, which is the LDP, receives an awful lot of support from tobacco farmers.
Yeah.
So, and apparently even the prime minister is a two-pack-a-day smoker. So I don't really see him being too eager to pass any laws soon.
Yeah.
In favor of non-smoking. However, on your website, 25cafes.com, you have managed to find this elusive non-smoking restaurants.
There are a few, yeah. Well, I've been here for a few years now, so some of them I've actually been visiting for the last 5-6 years or so myself. So I've already kind of found them over that time. But the other ones I've actually actively just started exploring, like really any station I get off to for like work or visiting a friend, I'll actively just like walk around like street by street and trying to find a smoke-free place. So you can tell like there's not some that are very open and easy to find. I've even found a few that I walked by every day, didn't even know there were non-smoking. So you really do have to go out of your way and search for them. So, which is one of the reasons I made the blog, so it's easier for people to find, because they don't really advertise it in Japan. Like, if anything, I think a lot of places don't advertise non-smoking because they think it's a negative thing.
Right.
Like, even if you go into a cafe here or restaurant and you ask them, like, excuse me, like, is this place non-smoking? Their answer will be, oh, no, it's okay, come on in. So you think, oh, awesome, it's okay. You go in there expecting it to be non-smoking, and they meant, no, it's okay, you can smoke. Because the culture is so different that they think when you ask that question, you're actually asking if it's smoking, if it's okay, you can smoke. That's how different the culture is here, where, like, in the West, you ask that question and everyone assumes you don't want smoking.
Right.
But here, they assume you're after smoking. Yeah. Even if you ask, like, excuse me, are all the seats 100% non-smoking, I hate smoking, they will still assume that you're after a smoking seat.
Right. Yeah, you know what's funny is I mentioned earlier that I was in Belgrade once in Serbia, the former Yugoslavia. And I mean, that whole country, it seems like they all smoke there. And what's funny is when I checked into my hotel, they gave me the room key and a little welcome pamphlet. And they also gave me a lighter just in case I wanted to light up and I didn't have my own lighter, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really funny how in some cultures where smoking is so strong, like here, they just assume that everybody smokes.
Yeah. Actually, that's kind of a good word of warning for anyone staying in a hotel in Japan. And make sure you specify a non-smoking room when you make your reservation. I remember I went down to Osaka and I checked into my hotel room and I couldn't even go in the room. As soon as I opened the door, like I was bombarded with this massive like reek of cigarette smoke. I had to go down the front desk and request a change. And thankfully, they did have a non-smoking room. But Yeah, I didn't even think to request it.
I've had hit and miss on that though, because I've requested non-smoking rooms, and then when I enter the room, it smells of smoke. And right. when I ask them about it, they say, "Oh, well, you just don't smoke in the room." So you know, like their thinking is when I'm in there, I won't smoke.
Yeah.
So when I'm in there, it's non-smoking. But then when I know someone else before me, it is smoking.
Bizarre logic, right?
Right. So you really have to request. I think some hotels even have non-smoking floors now.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's really fantastic.
So yeah, that's really great. But you know, the other thing I really like about your website, aside from, you know, being a guide to smoke-free cafes, it's actually a really damn good guide to cafes in general.
Because thank you.
You've got a lot of good information on this on your website in regards to how to find these cafes. You know, you've got like train lines listed, the menu, what language the menus are in, if they've got a if they've got a website, and some really great photographs of the food and what's available at these cafes. So I am looking forward to, because Japan has a lot of really cool cafes, but like you said, they're kind of hidden away sometimes.
Yeah.
And they can be hard to find.
Yeah, they don't really advertise themselves from the outside. You really have to, like, it's kind of the opposite of advertising a business in the West, where they actually have, like, a glass storefront we can see inside and see what's happening inside. But here you really have to, like, open the door and have a look inside. And
what is your what's your favorite cafe on your website?
My favorite one? Yeah. Oh, that's a good question. I'd probably Eat More Greens. It's in, where is it? Azabujuban.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really popular. I was surprised when I actually blogged about it. A lot of my Japanese friends and other foreigner friends on Facebook were commenting, going, "Oh, yeah, I go there all the time. Like, some of my friends have dinner there once a week."
Right.
So it's definitely worth checking out in Azabujuban. It's a wonderful area. The staff speaks perfect English. The menu's in English as well. It's very, very Western. They've got a lot of vegan, organic food. I think it's actually all vegetarian.
Right.
But don't let that turn you off. It's the food there is massive. You get so much for your serving sizes. I took some very much anti-vegetarian friends there a few weeks ago, and right. they loved it. They thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing that's quite rare here too, isn't it, is vegetarian plates.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard to find a real vegetarian, so if you're into that, actually, that's the other thing I noticed about your website too, is that you list a lot of vegetarian restaurants, which is another thing that's kind of hard to find, so...
Well, they kind of come hand in hand. I've actually found, like, every time I go into, like, a vegan or vegetarian restaurant or organic restaurant, by default, it's probably going to be non-smoking.
Right.
Because it's kind of the similar crowd will check that place out.
Right.
But there are a few exceptions, though. Well, I've gone into, like, an organic restaurant, and it's all smoking, and I'm like, really? I was like, why?
What are you doing?
I want organic food, healthy body, and then you're smoking. I was like...
But that's great. Thanks, Brad, for coming on the show. If people want to check out more about your website and your smoke-free guide to Japan, check out 25cafes.com. And I really hope you add more stuff to your website, because I'm always looking for smoke-free cafes. And I think your website provides a good guide for that.
Oh, thanks very much. And normally I add a new review like once a week. So yeah, always new content being added and new places being discovered.
That's great. Awesome. Thanks, Brad.
Yeah, thanks very much.
In continuing our Japanese language series, I'm excited to talk to Mr. Ken Cannon today, who runs a website called JapanThroughAnime.com. As many of you know, Japanese anime is extremely popular around the world, and the question that gets asked a lot is, can I learn Japanese by watching anime? And my guest today says that you can't. So, Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Glad to be here.
So tell us, you run a website called JapaneseThroughAnime.com, and your claim to fame is that people can learn Japanese by watching anime. Is that correct?
Yes, that's I'd say about 90% correct. There's actually a little bit of a kind of a tidbit that you do need to know, is that a lot of people think that you can simply just learn anime simply just from just watching anime subtitled and doing nothing else, which is actually not true. As you probably can guess, you actually do have to work at it, and there's kind of a strategy and a method to doing that, and that's what I teach.
Okay, so did you yourself learn Japanese by watching anime?
I did. Back when I was 16, I was really into the whole anime thing. In fact, I actually had a kind of a rough time at the time, so Animeco was kind of like my savior. I don't know if you know what social anxiety is. Have you heard of that?
What's that?
It's basically an anxiety disorder. It's called social phobia, really. You're scared to go outside, and you're kind of like a hikikomori is the Japanese word for it. You're really kind of scared of social situations, and it actually prevented me from going to school for about a year or so. And during that time is when I kind of got into anime and stuff. I was watching it a lot, and I had a lot of time on my hands since I was doing homeschooling and stuff. It was a rough time for me, but I started to learn anime during that time, and that's how I developed this whole thing.
That's a great excuse. I wish I thought of that when I was in school.
Oh, yeah.
I have a study phobia.
Yeah.
It only manifests itself Monday to Friday. Miraculously, it goes away on the weekends.
Yeah.
So you started watching anime, and what happened? Your interest in Japanese studies grew from that?
Yeah. At first, you know, I didn't even know what it was. I was watching it in subs. I just knew it was an ancient language. But after I started watching a while, I started to get into it a little bit more. I felt the Japanese dub of it was a lot more kind of encapsulating, and kind of the actors were a lot better. And from anime, they show a little bit of the culture. And I started to get into drama, Japanese drama as well. And from there, it just kind of grew. And really, I just kind of decided the goal that I wanted to get more into this whole culture that I really like so much, that helped me go through the tough time. And so from there, I want to learn some Japanese.
Okay. And so when you're originally watching it, it was subbed into English. Is that correct?
Yes, it was subbed in English. When I first watched it, on TV, it was dubbed. But then I went to the internet and I tried to find it. I was doing some downloading, but I'm doing that and I found the subs. Yeah.
Okay. So on TV, it was dubbed into English.
Yeah.
Which always sounds weird, no matter, you know, which way they're going. I'm sure American movies sound strange when it gets dubbed into Japanese.
Yes.
But then you found the subtitles. Did you find that reading the subtitles helped your understanding of the Japanese?
At first, I would pick up a few words. Like, I'm sure a lot of, if anyone watches anime fans would know this, you'll pick up a few words, like the words kawaii and konnichiwa, like regular, just standalone, hello, simple phrases. But from that point on, it doesn't help you really much at all, rather than just picking up standalone phrases by watching subs.
So you can pick up a few words, but that obviously is not going to help you become fluent. How do you transition that into fluency?
Right. Well, the first thing I did particularly is I went after America's favorite language learning program, Rosetta Stone. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Of course, right? So I went for that one. I started to learn that way. And I don't know if you've done it. There's like pictures and then there's words, and you have to match the pictures to the words. And at first, you know, I thought that was really cool, really interesting, kind of a fun way to learn. But after a while, they really didn't teach grammar really at all. And they kind of like asked you to match these sentences to this big long sentence to this one picture, and it was hard to figure out what exactly they were talking about. So from my experience, it was actually got a little bit harder from, you know, maybe 2 weeks. For the first 2 weeks, it was cool. But then after that, it was, in my opinion, I don't think it's the best way to study.
So then did you try any other programs that would help you learn what they're saying in anime?
Let me expand on that a little bit more on how I got to the whole thing of learning Japanese from anime. Went through Rosetta Stone. I also went through Pimsleur's after that because I felt Rosetta Stone didn't work. Have you heard of Pimsleur's?
Yeah,
it's a Pimsleur's audio program. Went through that one, and a lot of people say it works, and I found that it worked as well too. I think I personally preferred it to Rosetta Stone, but the thing I felt with that one was that they feed you kind of a little bit of constructed sentences where they don't teach you grammar again. It's just kind of like a repeat after me type sentence. They don't elaborate on what exactly you're learning. So I felt that was tough. And, you know, the reason why I was doing these things is because in my area, we unfortunately didn't have a Japanese class at our high school or at a community college. So I really had to learn it on my own.
Yeah, I agree. I've used the Pimsleur program before to learn other languages. And while it feels like you're really learning a new language because you're repeating these sentences that they say, you're kind of like, wow, cool, I can say that. And then when they ask you in the program, do you remember how to say this? And you can repeat it. You kind of feel like, wow, yeah, I am learning something. But then your knowledge of that language is extremely limited. So if you do go to Japan or another country and you suddenly you realize how limited your knowledge is, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Within a very narrow spectrum, you can answer some questions, but anything outside of that, and you're totally lost.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I felt the exact same thing. And then after PIMSLRS, I went through about halfway of PIMSLRS, I believe. And then I went to this other program called Let's Learn Japanese Basic. It was a video program. Went through that one. I felt that was better than the other two. But here's where the whole thing came about, is that I went through all this, did Rosetta, did PIMSLRS a little bit, did this program, came back to anime, which is, you know, kind of the whole motivation for me to learn the language and drama. And, actually, I really, like you say, I couldn't understand a thing. Like, here and there, I'd pick up words, but it was weird to me because it was like, I studied so hard. Why didn't I improve almost at all? Like, zero. And, from that point on, I did some research, went online, and I actually found out, a lot of people don't know this, especially beginners, more advanced Japanese people do this, but there's actually two types of Japanese. There's several, but basically they come into casual and formal Japanese. And things like PIMSLRS and Rosetta Stone and, you know, classes they teach formal. And the stuff used in most anime and drama and, you know, casual conversation in Japan is taught, is casual. And learning formal, which is what I learned, and then going back to a casual thing, it's hard to kind of make the connection, and the words actually sound different. And I figured out that's the reason why. That's why I couldn't link up the knowledge that I had gotten.
Isn't also, too, the Japanese that's spoken in the anime videos and TV shows, isn't that not only casual, but isn't it more of a slang-style Japanese? Because it's a cartoon, right? So they're catering to their children, so the style of Japanese would be quite a bit different than even just casual friends talking to each other in Japan.
Right, right. There is, in anime, they do use some slang, and they do use, anime has something like unique to Japanese animation, which is like little anime catchphrases where a character will say, if you've heard of Naruto, the popular anime thing,
right, yeah.
At the end of all of his sentences, he says this thing called dattebayo. Dattebayo. He says that every single sentence, and it's, for me, it's really annoying, but two, it's totally not correct Japanese. If you use that, people would laugh at you. And anime has that a lot. They have a lot of people who have catchphrases like that. But the thing, though, that I found was that in comparison to America, for example, Japanese actually doesn't have that much slang. There's only a few certain types of slang patterns that they'll use, and that's what they'll use in anime. And it's really not that all that different from what I found. I'll talk to my casual friends now. I'll talk to my friends in Japan casually, and, you know, I'll use the kind of the same language that I learned from anime, and it's really relatively similar. There's certain things that you don't want to say that makes you sound like an anime character, but other than that, I'd say 90% of the stuff, you know, is completely applicable.
Is it really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in English, you couldn't talk to your friends by watching Sesame Street or something like
oh,
that.
No.
You know what
oh,
I mean?
No.
Like,
yeah.
It's always funny when non-native speakers try to speak English by reciting movie quotes and things that they've heard in television and movies, and it just
makes you cringe.
It doesn't sound good at all. So, but you're saying in Japanese that anime matches pretty closely to what casual Japanese sounds like.
Correct, correct. There are, like I said, there's the catchphrases, things that you want to avoid, but for one, they're pretty easy to identify. Like dattebayo, he says it every sentence, so it's really hard to understand that that's probably not a normal Japanese. Second, there's the slang that they use is relatively small. There's only a few things, like, have you heard of the nai form in Japanese, the negative form?
Okay, what's that?
Tabe nai is to not eat, right?
Right, right.
You have the nai form there. But in anime, they'll say tabe ne with N-E-E to make it a little bit slangier. Really simple. But it's also, it's something, that's pretty much it. There's that, and there's like three other ones, and that's pretty much it. It's not a whole lot of different from actual casual Japanese in Japan.
Okay, okay. So then how do you go from being able to pick up every few words to understanding what they're saying?
Right, okay. So after I did back to my little story here, after I did the Rosetta, after I did the PIMSLRS, after I did the Let's Learn Japanese, and I was facing my problem, I researched, found out that there's casual and formal. And from that point on, I searched for a casual course that taught to casual, because I was like, there's a pretty big difference here. I need to know the casual so I can kind of understand dramas and anime and, you know, go to Japan and talk. And I actually didn't find anything. It was really, really difficult. There was, to this day, I still can't find a course. And so I was pretty much left on my own there, and I couldn't find at the time, I didn't have any Japanese friends, so I couldn't have them teach me. So I was like, all right, you know, this is pretty ridiculous. I'm going to actually try and teach myself casual Japanese. And the only thing that I had to draw from was anime. So I was like, all right, I'm going to teach myself casual Japanese from anime.
And so how do you do that? Do you just watch the show with a dictionary in hand, or how do you
Right.
do that?
That's the problem I was faced with. Thought about it for a while, and then I figured out, okay, what are the most common words in anime? What are the most, for example, I was watching Naruto at the time, the popular anime show. I was like, I wanted to know if I could isolate what were the most common words that spoken there, then I could, you know, get this big list of words and I could go down and learn these most common words. And I figured I could learn casual Japanese anime that way. So after I kind of decided that, what I did, I just went on this internet search. It took me like a month or two searching for manga transcripts. Manga is the comic book.
Right.
And they're pretty much, if you don't know, they're pretty much completely casual conversation. They're pretty much the exact same thing in anime. So I searched for those, and at the end of the month or so, I got this huge, giant, like 1,000-page-plus document of just manga stuff from this show, Naruto. And then I got this big long document, and I ran a word frequency analysis on it. I got this little program from the internet, and a word frequency analysis is just kind of categorizes what are the most common words that are popping up. And I got this huge list, and I got it down to about 300 words of the most common spoken words in Naruto, or as I like to call it, really in anime, because a lot of them are really similar. And so from then, what I did is I went from the top, the most common word, which is ore, which is the word for eye. I learned that, and I went to the second word, and the third word, and fourth, and I just completely went down the whole list from top to bottom, learning the most common to the least most common.
That's very interesting, you know, because I recently moved from Thailand to Japan, and I didn't actively study the Thai language there, but what I found was, if I understood even 20% or of the conversation of what someone was saying to me, you know, if I understood every other word or so, I could understand what the gist of what they were trying to say. I didn't need to understand everything. Even if I only understood like 20% of the words he was saying, I could figure out what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So you did the same thing with anime, is that once you memorize this big long list, suddenly, kind of what they were speaking and the subjects, and you could understand.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. You actually, that's surprising that you went through the same experience. I went through these 300 words, and then I started watching anime, and from after that, I was actually able to start understanding anime. It was really, really amazing. I couldn't believe it. Pretty much almost maybe say 6 out of every 7 words in a given sentence is what I understood.
Right.
And like you said, that 7th word, once you know most of the words, you can really figure out that 7th one from context really easily.
Right. And what I found too, especially, was that the 7th word, the one that you don't understand, like before you kind of understand a few of the words, you don't understand anything. You can't even hear the words. It just sounds like a bunch of noise, right? But once you slowly start to pick out 3 or 4 words, then you really start to pick out the words you don't understand.
Yeah.
So it's easier to go, hey, wait a minute, what does that mean? I don't understand what that means. Then you can look just that word up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it kind of snowballs a bit, that once you start to understand a little bit of vocabulary, then you start to realize what vocab you don't know, and you can quickly look those up, and it kind of goes from there.
Yeah, and you get the momentum, and you know, before you know it, you're speaking casual Japanese.
I'm surprised to hear kind of actually how much work you put into it, because I think many people who are searching for, you know, the answer to can you learn Japanese through anime are thinking that you can just sit in front of your TV for hours and miraculously you'll understand it.
Yeah.
However, in your case, you've proven that once again, to learn a language does require work.
Yeah. Even through we're learning Japanese through anime, you really have to do it intelligently. You can't just sit in front of something and expect to learn, not putting any effort into it.
Now, let me ask you, there's a gentleman who runs a very popular language site called tofugu.com.
Ah, yes. Koichi.
And he did a video that was very popular on YouTube claiming you cannot learn Japanese through anime.
Yes.
That the words that they say don't relate to everyday conversation, and there's no way that you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to that?
Personally, for me, one, I would respond to that with really my core belief as a person, and I think a lot of people would agree with me on this, is that if you have passion for something, if you really, really love something, and at the time, I was really, really into anime, and if you really, really like something, you have this drive inside of you, I think that it pushes you to do really anything. And if you have passion, who cares what kind of, you know, method you use? I think that's what's most important. And if you have passion for anime, that's cool. If you have passion for, you know, studying language in general, maybe you're a polyglot or something, then you can do it a different way. But personally, that's the way I'd respond to it. I think personally that you can learn Japanese through anime if that's what you like. If that's your cup of tea. Go ahead. Go more power to you, really.
Mm. I think what you said there is key, is that if you have passion for something, then you will search for ways to make it happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like for you, you search for these transcripts
mm-hmm.
to try to solve this problem. Whereas if you don't have passion,
you won't do it.
You won't do it. You know, it doesn't matter what program you use. You can use Rosetta Stone, Pimsleur. You can hire a Japanese person to sit in your living room and talk to you all day. But if you don't have passion for it, and this is something that kind of really struck me when we did the Thai language series with my podcast in Thailand, is that many of the successful Thai language speakers that we had on, one of the things that they always recommended was when you're learning a language, start with something you're interested in. You know, if you're interested in sports, go get a magazine that covers that sport in the language you want to learn.
Oh, yeah.
And try to start looking up that vocabulary.
Yeah.
But the problem in most school systems and most textbook is they teach you stuff that you'll never use in your daily life or you're not interested in, you know? Mm-hmm. You open up an average Japanese textbook, it starts with, konnichiwa, genki desu ka? And I mean, how many times do you actually even say that in real life?
Yeah, it gets worse, actually. I remember going to a college class in Japanese after I learned Japanese. I did it for an easy A. And I went through the first textbook, the very first lesson they had. One of the words in there was economics major.
Right.
And I was baffled. I was like, how could this be the number one most important word you should learn first? And, you know, from their standpoint, I guess because you're a student, you should know about the different majors.
Right.
But for me, I was just like, this is crazy.
Yeah, because when would you ever use that word?
Exactly. I still don't remember it. Yeah.
Okay. So you think then that you can learn Japanese through anime. It just requires a little bit of extra work. It's not something you can just sit down in front of your TV and miraculously you'll suddenly understand what's being said.
Right, right. But I do think that there's a certain level, like we talked about earlier, if you do have passion for something and if you have a lot of passion, you can really do things in amazing speeds. Like personally for me, after I made that point from, okay, I'm going to learn Japanese from casual, from anime and stuff like that, it didn't take me, you know, maybe 6 months, I'd say, for me to actually start understanding this anime. And from a year on, I was able to pretty much understand like 95% of it. I was really fast. I was really surprised by the speed I did it at because of the passion I had. I really was into it.
Would you say that you were, you know, like what's your background in studying languages? Did you naturally grasp all the languages in school or?
That's a really, really funny thing there because I took Spanish in, you know, like most kids do in America in junior high and then also in high school. And to this day, I can only remember the word for hello. Really, I'm that bad. When in junior high, I was a bad student anyway, but in junior high, I got D's and F's in my Spanish class.
So your background in learning languages wasn't great, but
yeah,
when
zero.
You found a method that you liked and a passion for something, your results came quickly.
Yeah, that's what surprised me the most.
That's really interesting. Now, okay, so let me ask you, you said after 1 year, you could understand most of what was being said on in the television, what you were watching.
Right.
Could you have gone to Japan and had a conversation with that knowledge that you had?
That's another interesting point that you bring up. Actually, right after that point, about, I'd say 2 or 3 months later, I actually had the opportunity to go to Japan. I was practicing judo at the time. And my whole judo school actually went to Japan to do this training camp thing there. It was really fun. And I went there, and I was able to actually talk to a bunch of Japanese people. These are my first Japanese people I've ever met, by the way. And it was really surprising to me because I thought I was going to go there and be overwhelmed. But when it came down to it, I actually pretty much was able to keep up with almost everything they were saying in Japan. And the people there, they would ask me, they'd be like, well, where did you learn Japanese? You're really good. And that was, you know, for me, that was just the most happiest thing you could have told me. But, they're like, I was like, oh yeah, I learned by myself. And they're like, really? And they're like, how long did you learn? And I was like, oh, you know, about a year. And they were just so surprised. The look on their face was so surprised. Like, I'll never forget that feeling when those people first tell me that. People tell me that to this day too, when I tell them how I learned. They're really just surprised and impressed. So it's really, really, really amazing what you can do with passion.
So let me ask you then, what about someone who's maybe not into anime? Is it only anime that can be used to teach Japanese, or could they watch other Japanese programs?
They definitely 100% could. But what I would say though is that anime is, you know, people, the voice actors, they're recorded with the mic right next to their mouth. It's very, very clear. They talk because the audience is kind of, targeted towards a lower, you know, a younger audience. The Japanese used is a lot more basic than what you'll find in some programs, and they speak so much more clearer because the mic is in front of their face, and they're you know, they're pros at voice acting. That's what they do. So I would say it's easier to actually grasp it from anime because it's so basic and clear.
So let me ask you about your website now. You have a program, you have a website called JapaneseToAnime.com where you actually
Yes.
teach people some of these techniques that you developed to quickly learn Japanese by watching anime.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. On my website, I started about maybe a year and a half ago. It wasn't too long ago. I started putting up these YouTube videos, how to teach Japanese, because I felt, you know, it was right in the middle of my senior year of college, and I was kind of bored. There wasn't a lot of classes, so I decided to do something I was passionate about and, you know, kind of teach people how to learn Japanese.
And what are some of the different subjects that you cover in your videos? I noticed you have one here called How to Be a Pervert in Japan.
That was a collaboration video I did with another J-vlogger at the time. And yes, all of my videos, almost every single one of them, focus really on the element of entertainment. I really feel that if you're enjoying something and you like it, you pick up so much more. I try to make all my videos as interesting as possible. My first video that I started out with was Japanese swear words. That's my very first YouTube video I made, and it was extremely popular because, if you know, people, for some reason, really enjoy swear word learning in foreign languages.
Right. It's always the first thing you look up when you start to learn a new language, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Japanese doesn't even have that many swear words.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Compared to English, does it?
No, not at all. There's a few words that are censored on TV, but there's like two of them compared right. to English, where there's hundreds of them.
So you have these videos, but you also have a course, is that correct? Where you actually teach people some of the techniques that you developed to learn Japanese by watching anime.
Yeah, yeah. I started that thing the beginning of this year, January. I had a newsletter going over on my website as well. And via my newsletter, people were really giving me a lot of cool feedback with the videos and stuff. They were saying they liked it. But the whole thing I kept hearing over and over was the fact that they wanted more. They wanted more videos, which is, you know, understandable if you like something. They were like, yeah, can you give us more? Can you do something else? Can you maybe, you know, teach something a little bit more longer than a 5-minute YouTube video? And I thought about it. At first, you know, I didn't really want to do it because I don't really consider myself a teacher, like real serious teacher. I'm just some dude teaching, putting little 5-minute videos on YouTube. But after I thought about it for a while, I thought it'd be pretty cool. I thought it'd be, give some cool value. So I actually started on a course, like a full length 15-week, video course, because that's what I was doing currently, on actually how to teach Japanese through anime, going really in depth and stuff, because that's, you know, what the feedback I was hearing from the newsletter.
Hmm. So what kind of things do you cover in the course that would say someone, if someone is brand new, they don't know any Japanese, can they take your course?
Oh yeah, that's the exact target I went for. I felt, you know, a lot of other stuff out there was random, especially on YouTube. You'll learn about how to say hello, how to say this certain sentence, how to say this. I was like, you know what? I want to give people a system to where they get building blocks. Like lesson one has the things you need to know first, and then lesson two and lesson three. And I included, and the best thing for that is what I thought was my original 300 most common word list in anime. So I actually do go through that whole list word by word. I teach them and I give them lots of examples, and I go through and I keep my same style really. I do a lot of humor and I make a lot of jokes, and the sentences can kind of make you smile a little bit, because I feel like if you're enjoying it, you learn a lot better.
That's very interesting. So after the 15-week course, what level of Japanese should the student be at?
After they go through the 15-week course, they will have the knowledge of the 300 words, and they will have practiced them so that they know them. But I feel that the techniques that I teach are things that you can keep using for a long period of time. So the first 15 weeks, I feel that you should be definitely at an intermediate level, definitely because it's a beginner course, and I try to cover everything beginner-wise, casual Japanese anyway. And after you do the techniques for a while, after you know, you should do those for about a couple months, really. Then after that, I would definitely say you'd be at an advanced level, and you could really understand Japanese to 90, same exact level I was after the first year, 90% of anime. And to give you a little bit more background on exactly what I'm talking about on these secret techniques, one of them, the most popular and the most famous one that I actually I teach a lot of people to, is what I call the subtitle tutor. It's the first one that I used, and it's really the first one that got me really understanding anime that was in Japanese that was in anime. And the subtitle tutor goes like this. You may have heard of the suggestion that you should watch anime or drama or something like that without subtitles, right? Because watching it with subs really doesn't help you all that much, like I've said it before. And that's the argument that a lot of people like Koichi go after, because you can't really just read the subs and expect to learn Japanese. So the next level of learning is people suggest is you should watch it in its source language, you know, whether it's German or whatever. A lot of people learn languages that way. They watch TV in its source language. But what I found is that that actually does not actually help you until you get to an intermediate to an advanced level, because you're just hearing, like you said, you're just hearing blah. Like, it doesn't sound like words at all. Right. You know nothing. So as a beginner, I really don't think that helps you at all. And I was looking for a way to actually take advantage of that. So what I did was I would watch an episode of anime or, you know, drama or whatever, in subtitles, once. And I'd watch an episode, maybe take me 20 minutes. And then immediately after, not even 2 minutes after, this is really crucial, I found, is you watch the same episode again without subs, back to back. And the thing what this does is your subconscious knows what's going on in the story because you just watched it. You don't know everything literally, but you know the gist of the whole story. You know the sentences that they just said because you just watched it. So when you're watching it again, your subconscious kind of goes to work to link the words that you don't, that you're hearing, to what you know it means in your mind.
Hmm. Now, just to clarify, you're talking about the subtitles are in English, right?
Oh, yeah, or so your source language.
Or whatever language, right. So
yeah.
Whatever your native language is, and then the what's being spoken on the screen is in Japanese.
Yes, yes,
so you
yes.
You watch it, you're hearing the Japanese, you're reading it in, say, English, mm-hmm. and then you immediately after watch it again, but turn the subtitles off.
Yeah, yeah. And this thing in particular, I feel that it's exponential in your already knowledge of Japanese, what you already have. So if you're a beginner, it'll help you. And I think it really is really helpful because it's what first got me learning. But what I found is the more Japanese I learned, the more I went down that 300 most common word list, the more I studied, the more this technique actually helped me. Because like, I increased, using the previous example, I increased the words that I know out of every given sentence. So at first I would know one out of seven words in a given sentence. Then the more I studied, I'd know two, then three, then four, and it was easier and easier to link the words that I didn't know using this technique.
Right. I agree with that too. I remember when I was in Belgrade one time in my hotel room watching the Cosby Belgrade? Show, Belgrade in Serbia. Eastern Europe. And I was watching the Cosby Show in my hotel because there wasn't much else to do there. Mm-hmm. But he was speaking Serbian, but it was subtitled in English. Yeah.
Interesting.
And I was actually kind of surprised actually how watching that for like a week, I could start to pick out a few words and I would know what they were saying based on what I had just read, you know? So, and it's interesting too, is that when you watch a foreign movie that's subtitled in English, you kind of forget that you don't understand what is being said, you know? When you watch a movie, like probably the most famous one in America, it was that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon one that came out a few years ago, right? I mean, it was probably the largest foreign movie in America. And yet when you watch that, you're reading it, but it's so natural, you kind of forget that you're not understanding what's being said.
Oh, yeah. And that's the magic of this thing, too.
Right, right. Yeah, so I really agree with that. That subtitle technique, I think, is really a good way to get started in getting comfortable hearing this mm-hmm. new language that you're trying to learn.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. That's really interesting what you've managed to do there. I'm sure a lot of the audience will be very interested to hear about your course. because I know that, you know, this is a bit of a controversial topic in regards to learning Japanese, is can you really learn through anime? Mm-hmm. And from your own personal experience, you can say that absolutely you can.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's why I started the whole course.
Cool. Well, if people want to find out more about your course and watch your videos, they can check out JapaneseThroughAnime.com.
Actually, if they do want any more information on the course itself, I have a little box on my website, the one he just mentioned, JapaneseThroughAnime.com, where you can kind of sign in and get my newsletter, and I'll give you more information on when I do release the course again, because currently, at the moment, it is sold out, but I do have plans to release it again within the next week or two.
Cool. So people can check that out. Awesome.
Yes.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for coming on the show.
Okay. Thank you so much, Anthony.
Thanks again to both of my guests for coming on the show today. If you're interested in finding out more about smoke-free cafes in Japan, check out 25cafes.com. That's the numbers 25cafes.com. And if you have a suggestion, email Brad, because he's always looking for new places to add to his website. And I would love to see his site grow into a really strong list of non-smoking cafes. And maybe one day we can help turn the tide against the smokers here in Japan. Although with 47% of the males smoking in this country, that might be a little bit difficult. If you're interested in learning Japanese through anime, which, you know, I gotta say, after listening to Ken's interview, I'm actually kind of interested in it too. I never watched anime that much when I was younger, but I've checked out his videos and they're really, really fun and they're really informative, and he makes learning actually kind of fun. So if you're interested in finding out more about his course and his program, check out the website JapaneseThroughAnime.com. That's it. I'm out of time. Thanks for listening, everyone, and bye-bye.